Blog Talk Radio.
All right, he's in here. Let's go.
Going on, Gerald? I can't. Wait a minute. Why can't I hear you? Can't hear you. Nope.
Yeah, can't hear. Check, check, check.
See what Saudi's offering Mbappe for 1 year?
No, what they say?
They're offering him $1.1 billion for 1 year.
He's out of there.
$1.1 billion, bro.
Out of there.
Like, I should have been playing soccer.
Bro, they are moving in. Moving in, boy. Oh, my Lord. He's out of there, bro. How do you pass that up?
You can't. $1.1 billion?
Ain't no way. He's out of there, bro.
Sheesh.
Shit. What they about to do? They about to start another NBA next? Shit. God damn, bro.
You guys hear me now?
Loud and clear. Yep. Gotcha.
There we go.
All right. Sweet. There we go.
All right. Gerald, is that how you pronounce your name?
Yeah, Gerald.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Let me just get your... Gerald, just give me some audio levels again.
Check. 1, 2, 3, check. How we sounding?
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, good to go. Right. Alex, go ahead.
Mic check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay. Al, just turn. Are you able to turn your mic down a little bit?
Yeah, I can turn it down a little bit.
Yeah, turn it down a little bit. Go again.
Mic check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All right. Yeah, I can make it work. I can make it work. Just turn it down.
I can turn it down a little more.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Mic check.
That's good.
All
yeah, right. That's good. And Gerald, how do you pronounce your last name?
Borgay.
Got you. Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Getting ready to start up in just a second here.
Gerald, how long has it been since you've been at FanSided? Or since you left FanSided, I should say.
Let's see. That was in 2021.
Okay.
So, yeah, I left in August 2021.
How do you like in the new role over at Phoenix Sports?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, man. I get to be like an actual beat reporter and shit, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, good for you, man. Awesome. Great awesome. Stuff, man.
Yeah.
Al, just Al, go ahead and turn your mic up a little bit.
All right. How's that?
That's good. That should be good. All right. Cool. All right. We should be ready to go here. Let me just swap this out. Busy off season for the Phoenix Suns, man. Looking forward to talking about this one. All right.
Is that a BoJack Horseman shirt?
Yes, it is.
Let's go.
Got it.
Like it. Let's go. Yeah.
One of my favorite shows ever.
When did you start watching? Did you finish it or like you just got into it?
No, I've been watching since like season 2, I think is when I started watching it live. And like, I just love that show.
Yeah, that show's great.
Good stuff here. Okay, let me slide you over here, Al. Boom, boom. And slide Gerald over. Fill that in. Okay. All right, cool. All right. Ready to go?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it, man. Okay. Let's go. Okay, manage this. Like this. Like this. Here we go. Salute to NBA Nation on this Monday afternoon. The NBA report is back. On today's episode, the Phoenix Suns had themselves a busy offseason, man. We're going to break it all down with our special guest, Gerald Bourguet of Phoenix Sports and the Phoenix Suns podcast. A lot going on, man. Bradley Beal, what's going on with DeAndre Ayton? A lot of moving parts, campaign gone, and a lot of guys coming in on vet minimum deals. Is this enough to overtake the Joker and the Denver Nuggets? We're going to talk all about it, man. Hit that like button, hit that share button, and lock into another fantastic episode of the NBA Report, man. Once again, CP the Franchise here. Alex Vitaris, the Stratocaster, and special guest, Gerald Bourguet of Phoenix Sports and Phoenix Suns Podcast. Man, Gerald, how you feeling today, man?
I'm feeling great. How about you guys?
Yeah, doing well, man. They call this the dog days of the NBA season, but for us here on the NBA Port, man, there's always something to talk about, and so that's why we appreciate you giving us the time to touch on these Phoenix Suns. And, you know, before we get into all the free agency moves, this Suns offseason was spearheaded by the acquisition of one Bradley Beal. You know, first and foremost, what was your reaction? What was the fans' reaction to the Beal pickup, being able to swap out Chris Paul and agent Chris Paul, a $30 million contract, and now you get Bradley Beal in here? What was the overall reaction there?
It was definitely a surprise for me. I didn't think that Bradley Beal was a realistic option, honestly. I kind of underestimated how much power he had with that note or that trade clause in his contract and the fact that he wanted to come to Phoenix over everywhere else. But once it happened, like, I know a lot of people were kind of low on the move, but I don't really understand that because, you know, Chris Paul, his first two seasons here, dude was an all NBA talent. He was phenomenal. He was huge for what the Suns needed, but last season he struggled a little bit. It felt like he was kind of coming back down to earth and maybe in the twilight years of his career a little bit. And if you can trade that for a guy like Bradley Beal, who's just been waiting for his chance to compete on a title contending team, like, you do that 10 times out of 10. Like, all they gave up was Chris Paul, Landry Shamet. And yes, they gave up some picks and some pick swaps, but man, if you can have a big three in this NBA where they punish teams for having that many max level contracts on the roster, why not do it and replace it with a guy who can play on or off the ball? You know, Beal seems really excited to be here. And like I said, be on a team where he said, like, we're going to be competing for something on a nightly basis. So I'm kind of excited. He spent his entire career in Washington and usually topped out as like a second round playoff team. So this is going to be fun putting him and Booker in the backcourt together.
Yeah. And so for like getting Beal, right? Like you kind of said that you're shocked by the power of his no trade clause that he even came to Phoenix. Were there any rumblings beforehand, or was this just kind of like out of the blue? Like maybe there were talks, like, you know how sometimes there are talks like, okay, maybe Matt Ishbia's saying, hey, we're going to try to go after this guy and we're going to see what the best we can do. But was this just completely out of the blue?
A little bit. Yeah. Like the report that the Suns and the Beal might be a possibility was like the day or two before it actually, the news broke that it was happening. So it kind of did come out of the blue. And I think all the reporting has been that, you know, the Suns presented Matt Ishbia with two options. We can go after a big fish this summer, or we can, you know, trade Chris Paul, waive him, whatever, to make room for some depth. And his answer was basically, why not both? So that's what they wound up doing. And it's worked out pretty well for them so far.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I first heard the news, I said for the Suns to be able to turn an aging Chris Paul where you didn't know if they were just going to cut him or were they going to bring him back on a cheaper deal? Were they going to trade him for smaller depth pieces, which, yes, they needed. But then to turn around and just turn him into a Bradley Beal, I said, look, you do that deal and then you figure out the rest later. But later's coming. And now the reports are out there that this could be your starting point guard or maybe a point guard by committee with he and Booker. How do you guys see that working with those two in the backcourt?
Yeah, you know, I'm not as concerned about it as some people are. I do think there's something to be said for the stabilizing presence that Chris Paul is in, you know, late game situations. He's one of the best point guards we've ever seen when it comes to controlling the flow, dictating the tempo of a game. And there were a lot of times during their last 2 years where he just would come up with a big bucket or a big play that they really needed in a pinch. And I do think that'll be on Booker to step up and own that role, on Beal to do the same. You know, obviously we know Kevin Durant is capable of doing that as well. So I think they're okay in that department. Frank Vogel has talked a lot about having multiple ball handlers, multiple offensive initiators. And I think they have that because if you look at what Devin Booker did last season during the regular season, and especially during the playoffs without Chris Paul, he was still scoring, you know, 30-some points a game, 8 assists, and he was doing it on like 65% true shooting. So it's one of those things where they'll need to balance the load because you don't want to tire Booker out by having to be the point guard and be a high-octane scorer like he is. But I do think between him and between Beal, even KD can initiate some. They do have enough playmaking to make up for the lack of like a true point guard.
Saying, you know, that's going to be key. I think Vogel's going to have his work cut out for him in just making sure that offense can still flow, because as old as CP3 was getting, as you said, he was still effective in that way. But, you know, just making sure that these guys don't settle into just strictly my turn, your turn isolation. You're going to need that, obviously, in certain respects in the playoffs and in crunch time situations. You're going to need that, and they should be one of the best teams in the league at that, in having Beal and Booker and KD. But Vogel certainly got his work cut out for him, just making sure that they have some continuity in that offense with three of those guys in that lineup.
I guess my question for you, though, Gerald, is that are you worried because only one rock? We're talking about guys who are between Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, and then, you know, it's funny you say big three, but yet I think of it as a big four because you still got eight in there. I think there's still expectations, but we can touch on him a little bit later. Are you worried that there's not enough touches for everybody to go around, even with adding someone like Bradley Beal, just because he is, you know, even though he can be efficient, he's also high volume as well?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it less with the big three because I think those three are all really well suited to play on or off the ball. Like Booker's been one of the leaders in the league for the last 4 years or so in points per touch. So he's a guy that can thrive on or off the ball. Beal, his playmaking grew and he's kind of an underrated playmaker with his time with the Wizards. And then KD, we know he's deadly off the ball and we know he's deadly on the ball, obviously. So these are guys that I feel like in the offense, that Vogel and associate coach Kevin Young, who's kind of he'll kind of be in that offensive coordinator role. I think what they'll be able to devise is a lot of interchangeable sets where those guys can run any of the three positions on or off the ball. And look, if you've got Devin Booker on a heater like he was against the Nuggets and you have to throw doubles at him, you've got either Bradley Beal or KD one pass away and then the other one in the corner, like that's going to be tough to rotate. And to your point about DA, we'll talk about him in a little bit, but I do think for him, that's the concern is, are there going to be enough touches to keep him engaged? Because Vogel's talked a lot this offseason about when you get your big man touches, when you keep him involved offensively, he'll run through a brick wall defensively for you. And that's what the Suns need more than anything. You know, he had a down year last year and still averaged 18 points and 10 rebounds. So this is a guy that can be efficient on a limited number of touches. It's just a matter of, is he going to be okay with that? Are you going to make him feel important enough and involved enough on offense to get him to really lock in defensively?
Once again, we're talking to Gerald Bourguet, who covers the Phoenix Suns for Phoenix Sports, as well as the Phoenix Suns podcast. Salute to NBA Nation, man. Hit that like button, hit that share button, and subscribe to the channel. Now, speaking of DeAndre Ayton, man, he's been in the crosshairs from the playoff exit through the offseason. A lot of question marks. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go for more depth pieces? Here was DeAndre Ayton, a quick soundbite from Ayton, courtesy of E! News Bahamas, on just speaking on how he feels about the whole situation. Let's hear this, and then I'm going to get your reaction to it, Gerald. Here's DeAndre Ayton. Now, Jared, when I hear this, man, I think my thoughts are kind of twofold. Here it is, you have a former number one pick who, by many's opinions, he's been okay, but kind of underwhelming for you know where the expectations are. Defensively, he was lackluster. You had Jokic expose him in the playoffs. Didn't play in the elimination game due to, I believe it was a rib contusion or something of that nature. So that kind of rubbed people a little bit the wrong way. So there's a lot of question marks about his heart, about his desire. Does he want it? Can he bring a tenacity on that defensive end? And then, you know, you look at his draft counterparts. You look at guys like Luka Doncic, Jaren Jackson Jr. gets Defensive Player of the Year. Mikal Bridges, his former teammate, taking another step up. SGA, even a Jalen Brunson. You know, in a redraft, who knows where DeAndre Ayton would go in a redraft. And then on the other side, I kind of feel bad for the guy, man. You know, because it seems like mentally this thing is – the criticism is really taking a toll on him and the pressure is really taking a toll on him. So this is going to be another case for Frank Vogel to solve. What do you think about where things stand with DeAndre Ayton right now?
Yeah, this is a pinpoint lesson in why when we as podcasters, writers, journalists, whatever we want to call ourselves, talk about sports, I always approach it from a place of this is what this guy is struggling with. This is where this guy needs to improve. This is what's going wrong. And it's never attacking them on a personal or fundamental level because that, you know, I don't know how you can hear that clip and not feel for the guy a little bit. And some of this, to a degree, is on him because honestly, a lot of the criticism would go away if he was just more engaged, if he just played better. Like at the end of the day, a lot of the people out here in Phoenix want to support him. But when you see plays like that game against the Nuggets where he's just standing underneath the basket and watching the Nuggets tip it over and over to themselves, like it's hard to defend plays like that. And I think there's always been kind of a misunderstanding with Ayton and his game. Like he said before the start of two seasons ago that he did not like his big man role, that he wanted to shoot more threes, that he's comfortable playing the four like he did at Arizona. And it's just like, man, you're a 7-footer who can be a dominant defensive center if you're locked in. But a lot of that stuff involves doing the dirty work, like setting screens, rolling hard, stealing early on the fast break. you know, crashing the glass, being a defensive rim protector. And I think he did all of those things during the Suns finals run. And when he didn't get paid for it, it sent a bad message. So, you know, we had an endless debate out here about whether he was worth a max contract at that point. And my argument was no in a vacuum, but you don't make these deals in a vacuum. You make them based on your team construct. And by not paying him that summer, they sent the message like, look, there's a cap on your value, even when you do all the things we need you to do. And since then, it, you know, defensively, he hasn't been as good of a rim protector. He hasn't been as focused. We saw playoff DA against the Pelicans in 2022, and then against the Mavs, it was kind of a no-show. So it's one of those things where I feel for him on a human level, because people do say the nastiest things to him. They tweet the worst things at him. And it goes beyond basketball, which for me is where I draw the line.
It's personal.
But at the same time, if he comes out here and does what he needs to do with this big three and the Suns win a title, or they get to where they should get in the playoffs this time around, like, I think a lot of the criticism will go away. There's always going to be haters, and I think that's something that he needs to understand. But when you're getting it from all angles and when you're kind of being pinpointed as a scapegoat, that can weigh on your mental for sure.
Yeah, and to your point, though, that it is warranted to a certain degree because of his inconsistent play, right, and what the expectation is out of him. And you can feel bad for the guy. I feel bad for hearing that because, look, I can only imagine when you have millions of people looking at you, you're constantly getting the tweets, whatever messages, whatever social media platform you're on, I can only imagine how tiring it is at his level. But getting back to, you know, you said where the franchise valued him, right, different ownership, different coaching, right? Now you got a new head coach, you got a new ownership. So let's start with the head coach first. Do you think Vogel can get the most out of him and get him back on track to what he's supposed to be for the Phoenix Suns?
I think his reputation as kind of this big man whisperer who has worked with some elite rim protectors, that you're definitely leaning into the hope that he can tap into that with DA, because during that finals run, he was a legitimate rim protector. He was a rim deterrent. You know, last year, I think opponents only shot like 2% worse at the rim against him, which in the past, that was closer to 8 or 9%. So they need to get him back to that level. And I think Vogel is a coach that can do it. I think you're mostly hoping that the change from Monty to an encouraging, optimistic coach like Vogel just helps with the 6 inches between his ears, to be honest. I think Monty and DA had a good relationship. And then I think that summer that he got his max contract, when, you know, there was that whole mess made of the fact that Monty didn't talk to him all summer, I think DA looked up to Monty as kind of a father type figure. And so when on this very big day for him, Monty wasn't there for him and didn't even, you know, call congratulations on your big deal, anything like that. I think that type of thing, I think it broke something in their relationship that they were able to move past it, but never really quite move on from it, if that makes sense. And I think with Vogel here, he's a coach that will get on his players for sure, but he's always, he keeps talking about, I see what players can be, not what they are. And I think for a guy like DA, who kind of constantly needs a new assignment or new motivation, I think that Vogel will be able to hopefully tap into that a little bit better.
Yeah. And my follow-up question is now for ownership, right? Because now it's Matt Ishbia. It's not Sarver who's owning the team. And he was part of that negotiation, being that hardball factor in why Ayton, you know, ultimately had to go get – the Suns had to match what the Pacers were going to give him in order for – Suns were like, all right, we're gonna keep him because that's a value. That's a number we're comfortable with. Do you think it's refreshing for DA right now with Ishbia at the helm, or is it still like uneven waters?
I think it's still uneven waters. I think Ishbia and Frank Vogel have said all the right things about, you know, we value DA. We believe we can restore him to an all-star caliber center, you know, that kind of talk. But at the same time, you look at the moves that Matt Ishbia has made, you know, going after KD and on his first day trading Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, two beloved fan favorites and really good wing players away. And then a few months later, trading Chris Paul, who helped get them to this point. Like, there's no room for sentimentality from Ishbia's standpoint. He wants to win. Mm. He wants to put a championship caliber product on the floor. And if DA isn't up to snuff in the first couple of months of the season, like, he is trade eligible for sure. And he's kind of the only contract that they can really trade and get meaningful right. pieces back, because you're not trading Beal with that no trade clause. You're not trading KD or Book, obviously. And the rest of the guys on the roster are all pretty much $3 million and below veteran minimum deals. So you don't have a ton of flexibility. If you are going to make a trade, it's, you know, 99% going to be DA.
Once again, we're talking to Gerald Bourguet, who covers the Phoenix Suns for Phoenix Sports, as well as Phoenix Suns Podcast. Salute to NBA Nation, man. Hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Hit that share button and subscribe to the channel. You know, on the Ayton front, I also look at it in terms of it's kind of twofold, right? They need him to play better for the betterment of the team. And if they do plan on trading him, to up his trade value to be more attractive out there on the open market. But I think it's going to take two things. Based on the comments that you hear from him, you have a fragile psyche, you have a fragile ego. That's on Vogel to kind of be the anti-Monty Williams and try to find some middle ground with his player. I also believe it's on KD, it's on Booker, it's on Bradley Beal, the leaders of the team, the leaders of that core, to really rein him in and make him feel a part of that unit. But I also think it's going to be on Ayton to adjust his mindset, because as you said, he's still looking at it as, I want to be the guy, I want the ball in my hands, but it's going to get much more harder with Bradley Beal here, with KD and with Booker commanding that usage, because what they really need from Ayton, yes, they still need his offense, but they needed to be a rim protector, a force on the boards, get after it second chance points. I thought they took a hit there in the playoffs, especially against Denver. And just be that guy that can be that force, and then your touches will come, and then they will feed you. So I think it also takes an adjustment on Ayton's side to know that he's got to do the little things to really move this team forward.
Yeah, and then that's where he made his money, or should have made his money in that finals run a couple of years ago, was by, you know, sprinting in transition and sealing early and attacking the offensive glass. He's a really good offensive rebounder when he's engaged and can get a lot of easy points from putbacks. But the trouble is, again, that falls in the big man duties category that he's not – I've never been convinced that he is fully committed to, not since 2021 when he did those things and didn't get the bag for it. But you're right, like, it's tough because with this new big three, the offense needs to be running through those three. So if you are setting aside possessions to get DA an old-fashioned post-up or stuff like that, like, that's borderline malpractice at this point. And he's a guy that is efficient on the block. He's really good in the pick and roll. A lot of people said Monty didn't know how to use DA, but they ran more pick and rolls with him last season than ever to try and get him into his sweet spots. But, you know, he regressed as a mid-range shooter. He regressed on his hook shot, which was one of his go-to weapons. And he hasn't really developed a handle to where when he catches the ball in the short roll and has a distance between himself and the basket, he doesn't have the confidence to always put the ball down, close that gap, and go up strong. You know, I think he averaged like 3.1 free throw attempts per game last season, which was a career high. And that just can't happen for a guy his size, his strength, his athleticism. So there needs to be a mindset change. He needs to add just even a serviceable handle or a spin move in the paint that's not so predictable. Because right now his repertoire as an offensive player is way too limited for some of the things that he wants to be able to do on that end.
True indeed, man. We'll see if he turns it around and if he wants it, man. But on a positive note, let's talk about Devin Booker. Let's talk about Book. 33.7 points per game in the playoffs. This was a soundbite from Bruce Brown, who played for the then champion Nuggets when they played the Phoenix Suns. And this is how Bruce Brown categorized Devin Booker's performance. This is courtesy of Theo Pinson's podcast on the Tidal League. Here's Bruce Brown. I mean, Book's playoff performance, despite the loss, was otherworldly. Just watch him as a three-level scorer, man. What did you see about that? What did you think about that? And also James Jones's comments in that this Phoenix Suns team is going to go as far as number one Devin Booker, man. What's your take on that?
it's kind of wild because you would expect that out of a Kevin Durant. That was why they traded for him, and yet their hometown kid is the one that played to that level. And, you know, you look at Durant's numbers, they're not terrible. He still averaged nearly 30 a game on pretty decent efficiency, but the problem is the games that they lost, you look at his shooting numbers, and they weren't Kevin Durant levels. And I think if they were at Kevin Durant levels, maybe that series looks a little bit different. You know, they were winning in game two by like 8 or 9 points when Chris Paul got hurt. They wound up losing that game by 10 points. I think if they win that game, it's an entirely different series. But like to your point, Book was incredible throughout the playoffs. He was unreal against the Clippers and then stepped it up during that two-game stretch that they won at home. I think he missed 9 of like 43 shots, which is just shooting 75% or better. And that was a good Denver Nuggets defense too. Like they were clamping down on people in the playoffs, and Book, it just did not matter for him. I think as time goes on, especially now that he has Kevin Durant, now that he has Bradley Beal, he understands this opportunity that's in front of him. He had to wait through like 4 seasons of pure misery on this Suns team to get to that point. Was constantly fine-tuning aspects of his game, improving weaknesses. You know, they said he was just a scorer, so he became more of a playmaker. They said he wasn't efficient, so he upped his efficiency in the mid-range and from three-point range. They said he wasn't a good defender. The last 2 seasons, he's been a very committed and focused defender. Like, every area of his game that people have complained about or criticized, he's gone out and addressed it. And so now the last remaining frontier is winning that title. And I think we saw in the way that he played his just focus in that moment. I think he's ready for it. And if he has the help around him that he needs, I would not want to go against that guy in the playoffs, that's for sure.
Was it always noticeable that Devin Booker had this level of talent in him since he's been out in Phoenix? Because there was a point in time where the Suns were like, they were a bad team. He was looked at as like, oh, well, he's just doing this because, you know, good numbers on a bad team doesn't really mean anything. But now to see how far he's come, like, was that noticeable? Because there were some people who were in his camp while others were just like, eh, don't really believe it.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm not going to, like, throw shade at everybody on the outside for this, but I do think to a certain degree, when you are here in Phoenix and you, like for me, you have to watch this miserable team play on a night-in, night-out basis, and Booker is the only one that's doing anything, that's trying anything. Like, you look at the rosters that he had around him, they were basically G League rosters for, like, 1 or 2 years. Like, he's playing next to Isaiah Kane and Mike James and Elfrid Payton, who I know Knicks fans are familiar with. Like, those are the guys that are like his third best teammates, maybe. Like, Eric Bledsoe was probably the best player he had played with until Chris Paul came to the Valley. And Bledsoe had like a good season before Booker was on the rise. But like, it was just, you know, he's playing with a 38-year-old Tyson Chandler and stuff like that. Like, of course he's not going to lead a team to the playoffs. I think there was criticism because he couldn't even get them to 30 wins. But at the same time, Book has also gotten a lot better. Like I said, a lot of the things that he heard in terms of, like, there was a season where he basically had to play point guard and average like 7 assists a game. That was a direct result of A, not having point guards, but B, working on that diligently in the off season, his playmaking, his passing, his pick and roll stuff, because people were saying, oh, he's just a scorer, he's just a shooter. So I think now that he actually has NBA caliber talent around him, the first season that he did was the season that they finished 8-0 in the bubble, and they had been dealing with injuries, so they were a losing team before that. But like, ever since then, they've been on a trajectory where everybody that was watching from the start here, night in and night out, knew that this would happen eventually. Once you surround him with talent, it's going to happen. But I do think a lot of people on the outside, and I don't blame them for this, were not watching the Suns on a nightly basis because they were a 15-20 win team. Like, of course you're not going to watch that team play. But you know, there were some slanderous things thrown around, like looter and a riot and, you know, big numbers on losing teams, all this stuff. And in reality, if he was not doing what he did for those teams, they probably would have won like 10 games.
True indeed, man. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how he looks next year with no CP3. It's his time now, and Beal can certainly be Beal. We'll see what KD looks like, if last year was just an outlier, or is it a result of just a little more age, a little more mileage? Yeah, the ankle injury coming in, wasn't able to really settle in. But nevertheless, I agree with James Jones, man. This has to start with Devin Booker kind of leading the charge. I'm looking forward to seeing how that looks. So now you have the core. You have your four with Ayton here for now. Now let's go through the offseason pickups, because James Jones rated this free agency 8 out of 10. Go through some of the offseason pickups, and what was your take on Jones's comments there?
Yeah, I don't think he's given himself enough credit, honestly. I would give it a 9 out of 10 just based on what he had available to him, because obviously when you don't waive Chris Paul, you don't have the mid-level to work with as a second tax apron team. Basically just had veteran minimums to work with. And I thought they did a really nice job of rounding out the roster. Like, even in the Bradley Beal trade, they added Jordan Goodwin, who is a really good point of attack defender. He's a young player, third-year guy, still improving. He was a menace for the Wizards on the defensive end last season. And that gives them two guys now, between him and Josh Okogie, bringing him back, that you can put on the ball, you can put with that big four, and not have to worry about Book or Beal having to guard, you know, Ja Morant
Chase
or Steph
around.
Curry or guys like that. So that's huge. I think bringing back Damian Lee was good. He kind of faded from the rotation, and we weren't really sure why, because he was a guy that posted a top 5 3-point percentage last season. So I think they'll be able to utilize him and add some floor spacing. Bringing in Yuta, that's another shooter who was elite last season. And a lot of the guys they added are really good from the corners, like Damian Lee, Yuta, they're both great from the corners. So that's exactly what you'd want, because in that Nuggets series, I think they shot like 26% from the corners. You know, Josh Okogie couldn't knock them down. Terrence Ross was like 1 for 10. Like, they needed those corner threes to fall and just couldn't get them. And I think they addressed that in a big way. Kata Bates Diop, one of my favorite pickups of the offseason for a vet minimum. I was surprised they were able to get him for that cost, because this is a guy that can defend multiple positions. I don't know if he's good enough to defend, you know, point guards and be a starter, but if the 3-point shooting holds like it did last season, that's a really good 3-and-D player that you added for, you know, $2.5 million or whatever it is. Eric Gordon, that was a big pickup for them as well. I think his floor spacing, the fact that he's willing to launch from like 5 feet behind the 3-point line,
he'll pull it.
That's going to add an extra 1 to 2 feet on the floor for these guys to drive or to attack. So that's big. And he's a veteran that's been around the block. Like, he knows the assignment come playoff time. And a lot of guys that they had on the roster last season didn't really fit that category. I love the Drew Eubanks pickup as well. He's kind of an underrated athlete and a really good rim protector. A lot of people don't know that about his game, but really efficient around the basket. He's not going to spread the floor for you, but he's a good pick and roll big and a good rim protector. That's all you kind of need out of your backup big. So I really like a lot of the guys that they've added in free agency. You know, Chimezie Metu, he's a guy that has potential, hasn't really put it all together, but he's another athlete. Bol Bol, like, look, my expectations are tempered.
NBA Twitter champion of the world, Bol Bol, the NBA Twitter Hall of Famer.
To compete.
Yes, he's there to compete
with Wemby. The Wemby stopper.
Yeah, the Wemby, the Chet Holmgren stopper, apparently.
Yeah.
Look, my expectations are tempered, but, like, going back through his film last season with the Magic, like, he does have these highlight plays that just get everybody fired up in the building. And if he gets minutes and is able to do that once or twice a game, like, that's all you really need out of him. He's a good depth piece, a young flyer, so I get it. I was a little surprised at the campaign trade where they basically just kind of dumped him for
– Yeah. I was going to ask that. Did you look at that as – was that a basketball move, or was that more of like being a cap casualty – staring at that second apron and having to make some moves here? I mean, you got three big contract guys, and four with Ayton, you got four big contracts on your roster. Was the pain move more of a cap casualty situation or a basketball move?
I think to a certain degree it was a basketball move, because based on what we were hearing, it felt like they didn't think campaign was going to get a lot of minutes. I think they were high on Jordan Goodwin, locking down kind of that backup point guard spot. And in a contract year, they appreciated what campaign had done for them, because he was part of that bubble run. He was one of the best backup point guards in the league
the
year they went to the finals. But since then, he's kind of struggled with bringing that change of pace and that speed off the bench and just making good decisions, being a solid backup point guard. So I think they were committed to Goodwin. They wanted to see what he could bring. Like you mentioned, he's making $6.5 million as opposed to, you know, Goodwin's minimum contract, basically. So I think to a certain degree, obviously, the luxury tax savings might have played a role, but I don't think Ishbia was motivated by that. You know, we saw something kind of similar when they traded Dario Saric at the trade deadline for Darius Bazley, and Bazley didn't really play, so it kind of amounted to like a cap-saving move. I think they're already committed because they were already past the second luxury tax, but like, I think they kind of also just wanted to do him a favor. Like, we know you're in a contract year. Go ball out for the Spurs or wherever you end up and hopefully raise your value because you're probably not going to play as much here.
Another player that I'm kind of shocked that the Suns didn't keep was Torrey Craig. I thought they would want to keep, you know, a defensive 3-and-D player on their roster, but he's off in Chicago right now. What are your thoughts on not retaining Craig?
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised on that too, especially because they owned his bird rights. So they would have been able to sign him to a little bit more lucrative of a contract than a vet minimum. Yes, it would have come with the same luxury tax payments and whatnot, but I was kind of surprised at that. I think they're pretty high on the second round rookie that they drafted, Tumani Kamara, who has been sort of compared to a possible Torrey Craig guy in that 3-4 spot. I don't know how much he'll be able to contribute. He looked pretty good at summer league, but I was a little surprised they didn't work harder to keep him. I was surprised that they traded, that they let him go and that they traded Campaign for what basically amounted to Bol Bol's roster spot. Cause I think both of those guys are a little bit more proven than Bol Bol, but they wanted to get younger. They wanted to get more athletic. They wanted to get bigger. So I think they definitely did that with a lot of the guys that they brought in. And, you know, I do think KBD will be a pretty decent replacement for what Craig brought.
They're just afraid of Chet and Wemby, man. You just need that. You just need that stop. But it sounds like the way you're talking about them, you're starting to buy into the Bol Bol hype as well.
I mean, don't tempt me with a good time. I'll say that. Like, the dude's fun.
The NBA Twitter Hall of Famer, Bol Bol, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we're talking to Gerald Bourget, who covers the Phoenix Suns for Phoenix Sports, as well as the Phoenix Suns podcast. So to NBA Nation, man, hit that like button, hit that share button, and subscribe to the channel. Yeah, you know, I was definitely surprised about the them letting go of Payne for pretty much, you know, pennies there. And then, but we'll see. You know, as you said, they have high hopes for Goodwin. They did pick up Saben Lee as well. You have Saben Lee there. Eric Gordon can run some backup point in the pinch. So we'll see if they're able to kind of replicate some of that earlier production that they got from Payne and have that second unit humming. How about the draft? Because, you know, a lot of those first round picks are out of their control. They were able to make some moves with Orlando to acquire some more second rounders. How does the Suns draft outlook look now with this new core intact?
I mean, James Jones's approach has kind of always been that one MJ meme where he's like, F them kids. So that's kind of where we've been for a while. And I'm okay with it. I think, you know, in 3 to 4 years, this will definitely be worth revisiting. But if you look at a lot of the picks that they traded, a good amount of them are pick swaps. So they're still going to have a pick. It's just a matter of where it's going to be. And I think with the teams that they traded those pick swaps to, Washington, Orlando, like, I'm sorry, but I don't see the Magic or the Wizards being better than the Suns in 2 to 3 years. Like, I still think they're probably going to keep that pick. And even if they do, the Suns are still supposed to be, they're planning to be in contention. They have the pieces to still be contending. They have the aggressive owner to still be good enough to where, you know, they're not going to be giving up a top five pick unless they just have some terrible injury stricken season. So I think you can live with that to give Booker his best chance at winning a title that he's had so far. And that's coming from, you know, a team that went to the finals 2 years ago. So I think if you have a chance to add a Kevin Durant while he was still at the peak of his powers, to add Bradley Beal while he's still in his prime, you do that and you give your franchise superstar the chance that, you know, the prior owner did not give him for the first 4 or 5 years of his career. And you deal with the rest of it later. I think a lot of the second round picks they've added could be used as, you know, minor trade chips if a player comes along who's maybe disgruntled or not having a good season, or the team is wants to go in a different direction midseason. You have a $6.5 million trade exception. You have a $5 million trade exception. And even though you can't combine those, like, you can use that trade exception and throw in 3 second rounders to get a player like maybe a Daniel House Jr. or someone in that salary range if you need some help midway through the season. So I think they have a little bit of trade flexibility, but to your point, like, the draft has not been a big priority under this current regime. And I think it won't be, especially if they continue to put themselves in this position where we can contend for a title. Whether that's sustainable or not, I don't know, because they did an excellent job getting the guys that they wanted in free agency. It felt like they had 4 signings announced or reported in the first 45 minutes of free agency. But will that be able to hold if they don't get it done and win a title? Will guys still want to come here immediately the way that they did this summer? I'm not sure. You need draft picks. Like, we've seen it with the Warriors. The reason they were able to sustain their title window is they were drafting young guys that could come in on cheap contracts and contribute.
Yeah.
The Suns are not going to have that in their arsenal. But we'll see. If they win a title this year, none of it matters, because this is the longest tenured NBA franchise that has never won a championship, 56 years of existence without a title. Like, they're well aware of the history, and they want to correct that.
And with, like, no first-round picks, this is all, like, you're talking about going truly all in. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? Like, did you want, like, the Suns to have a draft pick? Did you want to see, like, a young kid add to this roster? Because at some point, you talked about it, refreshing the rookie scale contracts. You know, you're talking about bringing in young talent that can learn from some of the top players in the NBA, and you're just like, it's passing on that torch, right, to the next person after this era is done. What are your feelings on all of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those bridges that you kind of just have to cross when you come to it. I think they've been pretty high on the guy that they took in the second round, Tumani Kamara. And at Summer League, he looks like a first-round pick for whatever that's worth. You know, you can look great in Summer League and not pan out, but you can also look really bad in Summer League and definitely not pan out. So at least they avoided that scenario off the bat. I do think, like I said, there's something to be said for the teams that are able to add to their talent and continue developing players. But if you look at the Suns' draft history, ever since, like, Cam Johnson, it's been very spotty. Jalen Smith, they really whiffed on that one. They could have had they could have had Tyrese Halliburton, which I think if they did, they probably win the 2021 finals. Even a Tyrese Maxey or a Desmond Bane, like, these are guys that all went after Jalen Smith at number 10, and nobody was predicting Smith to go that high.
Yeah.
So there was that story from ESPN about, you know, how scant kind of their draft department is. I'm hoping that Ishfield will be fed up a little bit so they just have more people, because it was kind of a bare bones crew compared to what other NBA teams devote to scouting and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But my view is, like, look, if drafting is not in your wheelhouse, if you're not going to devote the time and resources to it, like, those picks are less meaningful to you. You might as well turn them into a Bradley Beal or a Kevin Durant when you get the opportunity to do so.
You know, it's funny, man, because our old friend Isaiah Thomas is in Matt Ishbia's ear, and maybe that FM picks quote is a direct comment from Isaiah, because when he was here with the Knicks, we had a couple. You know, David Lee was a good pickup by him. I always thought Isaiah's evaluation of talent was good, but, you know, he also punted on a lot of drafts as well. So who knows? Maybe that's an Isaiah Thomas directive here that's driving the draft strategy, man.
Also spent a lot of money. Can't forget that either.
Oh, spent a ton. Yeah, spent a ton, man.
Yeah, at every turn, Ishbia has denied his official involvement. He doesn't have an official role.
Yeah.
But come on, man. Like, he's around all the time. Like, you know, he has his ear. Ishbia has admitted, like, I get advice from a lot of people, But on the Bradley Beal trade, we didn't consult with it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Listen, it's interesting, man. Look, I like Isaiah, the non-executive. I like listening to his takes on NBA TV and so on, and especially talking about his Hall of Fame career. But it's very interesting to see that he still has longevity in his league after being a long-time confidant and advisor for James Dolan, now replicating that role for Matt Ishbia. So hopefully it works out well for the Suns, man. But, you know, based on everything that has transpired over this offseason, Caesars Sportsbook has put the Suns over on their total at 51.5. They won 45 last year. What do you think about where they stand right now in the West and going forward?
I think if they stay healthy, they'll be over fairly comfortably. I would probably say somewhere in the 54, 55 win range. I do think there are going to be games where, like, you look at Beal, you look at KD, you look at Book, they've all missed anywhere from 10 to 20 games over the last couple of seasons. Like, You kind of just have to factor that in,
yeah,
and you hope that it's not all at the same time. But I think they're sitting pretty – like, I think over the last few years have taught them that the regular season is not the goal, because this is a team that had been struggling to win games, and then you see they win, you know, 51 out of 72 games or whatever it was the year that they went to the finals. And they follow that up with the franchise record-setting 64-win season and flame out in the second round. So it was like, what? We cruised all regular season. What do you mean that the playoffs were not going to be the same monster? So I think the last two seasons have definitely taught them the value of pacing themselves, of putting it together at the right moment. I think last year they were unable to do that because of how late in the game the Kevin Durant trade happened, and the fact that he rolled his ankle and was out for 3 weeks or whatever it was. So they only got 10 games together before the playoffs started. I think with a full training camp, off season, full regular season together to build that chemistry, to figure things out, they're going to be a lot better suited for the playoffs. So have they fully caught the Denver Nuggets? I don't know. You got to give respect to the reigning champs, but I do think the loss of Bruce Brown brings them back down a little bit. And I think the Suns, if you're going from Chris Paul to Bradley Beal, if you're going from the bench they had last year to what they have this year, and hopefully if you're going from Monty and DA's relationship to Vogel possibly building him back up, that could close the gap immediately. And I think the Suns have to be, with the Nuggets, one of the top two favorites to come out of the West.
So then what's the expectation for the Suns this season? Because you talked about pacing yourselves. It's a championship or bust. You know, you made the second rounds last year with KD, Book. We know that Ayton and Chris Paul didn't play. What's the expectation?
It's championship or bust every season that Devin Booker is healthy from now until the day he retires or asks out of the franchise.
Wow.
I feel like Ishbia is the type of owner that's going to be aggressive, and at some point he's going to be hamstrung by what he's able to do. Like, Bradley Beal still has his no trade clause. He has that massive contract, so that could be a problem if he's unable to stay healthy down the road. You know, Kevin Durant, we've seen his injury history recently. It's been tough. He's been great when he's been on the court, but that could be a problem as well. But I do think, like, if you have those three, it's definitely championship or bust this season and every season that you have them. And I think Booker, especially now after tasting the playoffs, after tasting the finals, after getting close to winning a title and not being able to do it, like, you have this window that you need to capitalize on and prove to him, like, not only are we going to put a winning team around you to compete for championships now, but we're going to be able to retool when the time comes and continue to do that. That'll be the challenge for them with limited flexibility, limited assets at that point in time. But for now, like, you've maximized your title window with three superstar caliber players. Now you just got to go out there and get it done.
True indeed, man. Well, Gerald, great job, man. Excellent job. We appreciate all the insights you provided on those Phoenix Suns today. Let the fans know where they can find you, anything you guys are cooking up over there on the Phoenix Suns podcast. Just let the people know, man.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Gerald Bourget. You can check out all my work if you're interested in Sun stuff at gophnx.com. And then we've got our podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, the PHNX Suns podcast. We do 5 a week, so we are here pretty regularly. We are feeling the dog days, like you mentioned before, of summer, but there's always something to talk about.
Absolutely, man. Well, great job, and hopefully we'll catch up again during the regular season, man. Great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No question, man. Once again, that was Gerald Bourguet of the Phoenix Suns Network, Phoenix Suns Podcast. Gave us some great, great intel on those Phoenix Suns, man. What do you guys think? What is your outlook on the Phoenix Suns offseason? How would you rate it? Leave some comments in the comment section. People in the chat have voted, and they've voted 8 to 9, 37% say they'd rank it between an 8 and a 9 out of 10. 30% say between 6 and 7. And 22% say 10. So a lot of you guys think they have rebounded quite well and made a lot out of a little, as Gerald said for us, man. So remember that this show is available in audio podcast format, man. All the major podcast platforms. No reason to miss it. And tap in with us. We'll see you guys Wednesday for another episode of the NBA Report, man. CP the Franchise, Alex Rotaros. Great show, everybody. Great show, TM. Great show, all of our mods. Salute to Jay Boogie in the chat. And we'll catch up on Wednesday, man. We out of here. Peace. All right. Yeah, great job, fellas.
Sweet. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, Gerald, thanks again, man. Absolutely great job. Yeah, we'll certainly catch up, man, if you guys are available during the before the season starts. Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. I'll send the handle, but when you send out the tweet at some point in time, if you could tag PHNX_sports,
sure.
I'll have our social person retweet that as well.
Okay, so sounds good, man. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good to see you.
All right, man. Take care.
Nice to meet you, man. Have a good one.
You too.